Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I am an alcoholic.
Morgan.
Hello everybody. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They're across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs right out there. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12, part 1, and we're doing a little bit of a different format the last week of the month, so we're going to kind of open up the floor a little bit, and I'm going to pick on some of you guys after our lead speaker, David, here, shares a little bit on the readings that I'm about to do. So I'm going to read the first three paragraphs. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And this is on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And the next one is page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. And then the last one is also on page 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book, unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. So now I would like to welcome our lead speaker tonight, David.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is David Julian, and I am a real alcoholic. And if you don't know what a real alcoholic is, read the big book. But anyway, my parents raised a mannerable young man, and I'd like to demonstrate that by saying thank you to Simple Actions home group members for allowing me to come up here and tell my story. Anytime I get asked to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's a privilege. So I'm going to start off talking about step 12, but I'm going to give you a little baseline on my drinking for those who are in this room that don't know me and have never heard my story. For those of you that have heard my story once, you've heard them all. So just bear with me. Like I said, I am a real alcoholic. There's three kinds of drinkers as described in the big book: the real alcoholic, the heavy drinker, and the moderate drinker. I am neither of the last two. I'm a real alcoholic, which means when I started drinking when I was 13 years old, I was an alcoholic. It didn't take me a couple days, weeks, months, years to become an alcoholic. When I drank the first time when I was 13 years old, I got hammered. When the second time I drank when I was 13 years old, I got hammered. Until the last time I drank, till February 24, 2013, was the day I took my last drink, I got hammered. I never drank to get a buzz. I never drank to have just take the edge off of a good day, a bad day, a hot day, a cold day, whatever it was. I drank for one reason, and I was to get hammered. I had never had any intention just to get warm and fuzzy. It just doesn't happen. That's not what I wanted to do. If I wanted to be warm and fuzzy, I'd sit in a bathtub and light some candles. But anyway, I said my sobriety date, February 24th, 2013. By the grace of God, in a few months, I'll have 6 years of continuous sobriety. And I'm going to tell you this. I searched for a long time, probably about to the last 10 years of my active alcoholism, to find a solution. There were days when I woke up that I was full of guilt, shame, and remorse. I wanted to literally murder people because I couldn't figure out for the life of me how just to not to drink. In the 8 to 10 hours or 14 hours that I was at work, I was doing nothing but constantly thinking about drinking or how I was not going to drink when I got off of work that day. And that was brutal. It terrorized me for years and years. I wasn't a binge drinker. I wasn't a spree drinker. I started drinking daily when I was 20 years old. So that's 14 years of daily real alcoholism. And like I said, there was a lot of time in there when I wanted to just not drink, but I couldn't figure out how just to not to drink. I placed myself beyond human aid, which means that I tried, on page 31 in the big book, there's different methods that some people, the original 100 members, have combined, got together, you know, different reasons that they tried to stop or moderate their drinking, switching from Budweiser to Coors Light, which was horrible. I don't suggest ever drinking that. Switching from whiskey to tequila, which is equally as horrible. I never drank at work unless we went to lunch and the boss man said, let's drink margaritas. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's drink margaritas, you know. I didn't ever sneak out to my truck and drink. It just wasn't part of my day. But when I got off of work, it was it. I was there to get hammered. So I come into AA looking for a solution. I want to never drink again when I got here. If someone had kind of nudged me to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous before February 24, 2013, I would have came in here and tried it, but I didn't know anything about AA. When I got to my detox, I went to Virginia Beach Psychiatric Center and spent 7 days in detox. Immediately went to Edge Hill, which is a treatment facility out of Winchester, Virginia, and did my 30 days out there, and then came back and got involved in AA. 2 weeks into me being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, the obsession was removed. Completely removed. It did not exist. I was dumbfounded. For years, I had tried to find a way to take away the pain, to turn the switch off so that way I didn't have to drink. And I couldn't find it. I was homicidal when I got here due to the torture of alcoholism. And I come into here 37 days sober, get busy in AA, and within 2 weeks the obsession was gone. I took the steps immediately, and it talks about in this book time and time, hundreds of times, it talks about being a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I will tell you, as soon as I had that spiritual experience by taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was recovered. I didn't know that was even possible when I got here. I was hearing people sitting in this crowd with multiple years of great sobriety talking about I didn't have to drink again. And I thought they were full of it. There's no way that you could drink like I did and have multiple years of good, smiling sobriety. Because anybody can get sober. Punch a cop. I did. I got sober for 3 months. But as soon as I got out, it didn't last. I was immediately drinking again. I was dumbfounded that the obsession could be removed that rapidly. And this is how it happened. I got busy doing AA. I got a sponsor. I started calling that man every day because he asked me to. He said, "Are you willing to call me every day?" I said, "Absolutely." He said, "Are you willing to read that book?" I said, "Absolutely." He said, "Good. I want you to do this. Call me at this time, 6:45. I want you to read this book every day." For the last 5.5 years, I have been calling my sponsor almost every single day at 6:45. I read this book more than any other book I have ever read in my entire life. Having had a spiritual experience as a result of taking these steps. All right, now get to chapter 7, working with others. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intense work with other alcoholics. And I am no rocket scientist. I'm a carpenter. I'm 23 years as a framer. I'm going to break this paragraph down. This sentence, practical means concerned with the actual doing or use of something. It is evidence-based, ladies and gentlemen. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure with an I. E means that make sure. Ensure with an E means that I'm going to do something. Ensure with an I means I have been given an insurance policy. Immunity, protection, or exemption from something. Oh my God. This says it right here. It says the act of helping other alcoholics gives me an insurance policy and protection from drinking. Holy shit. I searched my whole life for this. And now this is what I have to do. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intense work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And other activities doesn't mean prayer or meditation, because these are things that I need to be doing on a daily basis, that I do on a daily basis. Prayer and meditation, upon awakening, when I retire. These are things that I do. It's other activities, fishing, hunting, more work, less work, working out, going to the coffee shop. That's not what this is talking about. Those are activities that does not ensure and give me an insurance policy from drinking. Prayer, meditation, and helping other alcoholics. I've said it time and time again, and I got this from my sponsor who got it from his sponsor who got it from his sponsor. The three fundamental ideas of AA: trust God, clean house, and help others. Without that, I am nothing. And due to this program, I am able to stand up here today and speak to you, ladies and gentlemen, from a position that I have never spoken to you before. As a recovered, the obsession to drink and all the other things, drug that I did, is gone. It's lifted. The only time I think about drinking is when I come to these meetings as a result of doing this. I've been placed in a position because of my own drinking experience and the character that I have to help many, many, many men. My phone rings every day at 3:45, 4:15, 5:15, 5:30, 5:45, 6 o'clock, 6:15. I call my sponsor at 6:45, 7 o'clock, 7:15, and 7:30. All these guys that call me at their designated time have been sober for a year or more, have taken the steps. The problem has been solved. It's amazing. Never once in my entire life before I got sober and started helping other alcoholics did I ever have a direction. I never had purpose in my life. I woke up, I went to work, I drove nails, I sawed lumber, and I came home and I got drunk and I did it again and again and again and again. I was a horrible son. I was a horrible brother. I was a not present uncle. I was not a friend. I was nothing. I was a drunk construction worker, and that's all it was. Having had the spiritual experience, been placed in a position to help other alcoholics. It's amazing. Purpose and direction. I finally know what I'm put on this planet to do. Sawing lumber and driving nails pays the bills. It allows me to have nice boots, a truck, a roof over my head. I can eat steak when I want to, but my main purpose in life is to help other alcoholics. And that's amazing. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And I know all about this securing their confidence when others fail. I had a couple, three or four times I went to the psychiatrist or psychologist. I don't know the damn difference. I know that I paid him $125 for 45 minutes. And I walked into his office. I walked right past. I was the only truck in the parking lot. He had a brand new Mercedes SL500. I walked right past that. I got in the elevator, walked up to his office, and I sat in his mahogany chairs, and I looked at his mahogany desk and his fancy pictures on the wall, and it was a picture of him and his family, his three sons and his two daughters, and they were all wearing matching sweater vests. And right next to it was a picture of his 57-foot offshore sport fishing boat. And I was like, I am not telling this man anything. There is no way. Now, I am not perfect. I never claim to be perfect. I don't take anything away from psychiatrists or psychologists or whatever it is. If they help, that's great. It didn't help me any, because I wasn't willing to disclose anything to a man that I knew, because I listened to him, had never walked in my shoes. Now, I come to AA, I go to my first meeting. And I was sitting in the back of that meeting as a patient of the Virginia Beach Psychiatric Center. They took the string out of my hoodie. I didn't have any shoelaces. They took my belt. I felt completely demoralized. And I heard a man talking, and he was explaining why I drink like I did, explaining why I feel like I did when I'm just not drinking. 30 seconds into this man, and I have no idea what he looks like. I'm looking at the back of his head. I had more trust in that man than I had anything in my entire life, because he finally gave me an answer to things that I had no answer for years and years and years. He secured my confidence. After that meeting, I walked up to him. I asked him to be my sponsor. And just like I said, he asked me a couple things. And it was amazing. Amazing. I felt like a brick had been lifted off my chest, stacked multiple bricks week after week after week after week, because I had no idea what I was dealing with. I had no answers why I can't stop drinking. Why, when I go to work and I tell myself hundreds of times a day, I'm not going to drink, 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 I get off of work and I drink. The anticipation that had built up inside of me at the end of an 8 or 10 hour shift was so great that when I got off of work, I was shaking like a leaf, and I had to drink to cool it off. And this man told me, he explained to me that I have an allergy. I have an obsession of the mind and a physical allergy to the body, which when I go to work, I tell myself that I'm hundreds of times I'm not going to drink, or I can't wait to get off work and I'm going to drink. That's the obsession of the mind. Normal people do not obsess about drinking from the time they wake up until the time they start drinking. And that when I pour it in me, I cannot stop how I cannot moderate or control how much I drink. And it blew my mind. I had no idea. I just thought I was a 164-pound, very thirsty human being that liked to drink a case of beer and a half a bottle of whiskey when I got off of work. It made sense, because I had no idea. I think I've been talking a little too long. Morgan gave me 10 minutes. See your man alone if possible. At first, gauge in general conversation. This is the paragraph, see? And I knew all about this chapter just by standing, getting in the back pocket of my sponsor before I had even taken the steps and was sponsoring other men. I knew all about this. Because when I showed up, my grand sponsor, I met him, I was about 2 months sober here, and he said, "You're going to shut up unless you're asked to speak." And I said, "Yes, sir." And I followed him and my sponsor around meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, watching and observing. If I'm speaking loud, I apologize. I'm very hard of hearing. I have 60% loss of my left ear and 30% loss of my right ear. I'm very hard of hearing. So I observe. And I observed what my original sponsor, the man that saved my life and took me to the steps, I watched what he did with newcomers. And I did that for about 2 months. I watched and I paid attention. And before I even got to this part in the book, I had so much experience by watching what he did that when I read this, I was like, oh, right? Now I know where he got it from. So this paragraph, this is, hey, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. How are you? And then I shut my mouth and I listened to some sob stories for 5 or 10 minutes, which anybody, people that know me in this room know I'm not a great conversationalist. And I can only listen for so long. And then I'm like, listen, dude, you want a solution, right? Because what you bring to the table, no one in this room wants. Because it was the same thing when I got here. I didn't want anything about my life. So this paragraph just teaches me that I have to be a listener to put myself in a position that way I can help another man. I have to very much concentrate on this part right here. Do not moralize or lecture. Because I come from an AA line, it's what's been dubbed baseball bat sobriety. You either gonna do it or you don't do it. I don't sugarcoat anything. It wasn't sugarcoated for me. When I got here, the man that took me to the steps, he said, listen, if you don't take these steps immediately, you're gonna kill somebody or somebody. You're gonna kill somebody else or yourself. And that was the absolute truth. If I would not have had the spiritual experience, I surely would have destroyed myself and those around me years ago. And I knew it. So I don't moralize. I don't lecture. I don't, because I'm not perfect. I'm probably the most imperfect person sitting in this room right now, in my opinion. I have to watch what I say sometimes because I'm so passionate about Alcoholics Anonymous because it saved my ass and it gave me a life beyond my wildest dreams that sometimes I get a little hot and heavy into it and people take me wrong. They think I'm yelling at them. I'm not. I'm just deaf. I'm just talking because I need to hear what I'm saying. That's it. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic, a real alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop all the struggles. Probably 2-3 times a week. And I described that in my story. The mental twist, which leads to the first drink of a spree. Again, I'm not a spree drinker. I have no experience with binge drinking. If you want to talk about consecutive year after year after year after year of drinking, absolutely, I could talk to you about that. I don't know anything about binge drinking or spree drinking. Anyway, how about that, Morgan? Carry on. I'm going to sit my ass down.
That was awesome. Thank you.
All right, who's going to be the first victim tonight? Amy?
We locked eyes. I figured, you know, it's a quick and easy.
I'm an alcoholic and my name is Amy.
Is that Amy?
And the most important thing about carrying the message for me is it is the only antidote. I know we were talking about it ensures immunity from drinking. And it's been a long time since I had a drink or even thought about a drink, but I'm always in danger of deep thinking. And my deep thinking is always about me. And working with others is the only antidote to the crushing, brutalizing life of self-centeredness that I have led. I was the kind of friend who you would get maybe 30 seconds into your story and I would say, can we talk about me now? Because I just arrogantly assumed that what I had to say was more interesting and it was certainly more important. And although on the surface that looks like an effective strategy for living because I'm busy taking care of my business, I'm taking care of me, it's not an effective strategy because it means that I take everything personally. Whatever you're doing, whatever you're saying, wherever you are, I think it's about me. And basically, you are all standing between me and what I want. Maybe sometimes what I want is for you just to shut up so I can talk about me. Maybe what I want is to look good and you're not making me look good. Maybe what I want is to feel good and for whatever reason I'm not feeling good in the moment. And feeling good is how I got here to begin with. I spent my early life thinking that how I felt was more important than anything else. And because how I felt was not good, I had to have anesthesia. So without the anesthesia, I have to find a way to live out of that self-centeredness. And so even though I continue to think about me and have plans for world domination and what I'm going to be wearing when I'm on TV thanking all the little people, when the phone rings and it's somebody else and they have something going on that's very serious for them, it shuts all of that down. I find that I am peaceful. I find that I am at ease. I find, like David says, that I have a purpose. Not the purpose of standing around looking good, looking cool, feeling good, but a purpose that is divine. A purpose that inspires me to be a better person. And although I can't really be a better person on my own, it takes me back to that place of powerlessness. I can't change myself. I can't make myself a better person. But if I do this work, something magical happens and I become a better person. The second great thing about carrying the message for me is I have found out more about God in the relationships with people where they're my sponsor or I am their sponsor. I discover that people who feel unlovable and unlovely, I can love them. And there are lots of times when I feel unlovable and unlovely. And so I put together that if I can love this person who is crying and melting down on my couch and wants to kill people or wants to kill themselves, if I can love this person, and of course I do love them because they're me, if I can love them, then what does that mean about how the God of my understanding must love me? So I have found out about who God is and what God is as I am stretched into these relationships where I learn to love and I learn to be loved. Thanks. Thank you.
Johnny.
I want to say thank you.
Try to pull the head away real quick. Yeah, it's like, all right.
Hi, I'm Johnny. I'm a real alcoholic as
Johnny.
Well.
It's a
different view up here. I came in right before David did, and my sobriety date is 8 months after him. I came to you guys yellow. I had a bad liver, and I had no intention of getting sober and didn't want anything that you guys were offering. I came into these rooms. First of all, I didn't come, I was brought. I came to these rooms with the single purpose of I had maybe four friends left and I wanted to shut them up. And I figured an hour a day would get them off my back so I could drink the way that I wanted to drink. And I was thinking about this today, I was thinking about the 12th step and if I were called on what I would say. And I was thinking about how every part of my sobriety, you guys have been there. A lot of these people in this very room have been every part. I don't see David, but I remember when I was still drinking and in the rooms, David after every meeting would come up and give me a hug, which was weird, and tell me those three things, which is, you know, you never have to drink again, you don't have to feel this way again, and you don't have to do it alone. I'm gonna call Debbie out. I remember in this very parking lot when I was drunk one night, I came into the meeting and she stopped me in the parking lot and she said, Johnny, why don't you just give this a try? If you're not happy with the outcome, we'll refund your misery. And I remember what I thought of her when I walked away from her. And because she thought enough of me to tell me the truth instead of lie to me. I remember when I was 60 days sober that one of the guys in my sponsorship line, one of the first instructions Dave was my first sponsor, that he gave me, besides he wanted me to pray on my knees every morning, every night, and some pages in the book to read, was he wanted me to call three drunks a day, and that has saved my life so many times. And there was one of these guys that asked me to go with him on a 12-step, and I'd never done this before. We actually went and knocked on a guy's door. And this guy opened the door. He had a black eye. He was standing there in his boxers. And when I'm saying he was standing there, this is giving this guy credit. He literally looked like he was just going to keel over and die right in front of us. And I remember thinking to myself, that's me. I remember it stunned me. It took me back a minute. That was me. I mean, I wasn't 6 foot tall. I didn't have a black eye, but that was me staring back at me. And there's another guy in my sponsorship line that had to do some jail time. And he couldn't. He knew he had to do the time, and we kept driving him there, and they wouldn't take him in. And it was very frustrating because he just wanted to get it past him. And I remember it made an impression on me because I went 20 years without paying the IRS. I just didn't pay him any money. And I watched this guy just stand up and do this, and it seemed like to me it was the bravest thing that I'd ever seen. And it gave me the courage to one day walk into an IRS office with nothing. I didn't even have an ID and just my Social Security number and spend 6 hours trying to clear up a 20-year mess. And that just got cleared last year, within 5 years. Within 5 years, I went from basically homeless, never had a driver's license in 15, 20 years, driver's license, bought a house, I have a job. All these things you guys showed me how, because basically all I really do is make coffee and try to be of service. I mean, technically I'm in charge of a sales team, but I really don't understand the technology of all of its roadside assistance. I come in early, I make coffee, and I know how to deal with people because you guys taught me how. I know how to tell my story in meetings. I can share. I know how to shake hands afterwards. I know how to ask you, you know, if you have two drinks and you keep going, you might have a drinking problem. What it says in the book is true when it says sprouting up. You know, when I work with people, you see them when they come in the door. I've got one guy I'm working with now. When he came in, he clutched a folder after every meeting. That's all you see him do. And now I'm watching him take phone numbers, and I'm watching him hug other people, and I'm watching him start to share this message. And it's the most beautiful, it's better than any shot I've ever taken. That's really all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Debbie, you like to share?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Wow. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Debbie.
Miss Debbie.
Can you hear me? Because this will make me go cross-eyed. That's what I used to do. That's how I knew when I was drunk, when I was drinking. It's like, I got to close that eye. I'm a recovered alcoholic, and my name is Debbie. And I've just recently started saying that, and I've been sober a while. And I believe that today. And the 12th step, I just have like a warm, fuzzy feeling out there. And I'm not in the bathtub. I hate taking baths. But anyway, I will get to a point at some point. But when I got sober, they talked a lot about the language of the heart, and they talked a lot about there will come a day when you can no longer ward off the grace of God, and I had no idea what any of that meant. I did not come willingly. I did not want to stop drinking. I was way too young, too smart, and too pretty to be in these rooms. I was in nursing school in downtown Baltimore, and I would go to meetings because the recovered alcoholic judge that I had thought it was a good idea that I go to meetings. And so I would go to meetings, and I would hear these inner city alcoholics and what I thought of as an alcoholic with the raincoat and urinating on themselves. I would hear their troubles while they were in detox, and I'm like, not the demographic, and thinking I do not belong here. And I would identify out. And what they never said to me was, don't come back. And I am very grateful for that. And so alcohol is a great persuader. And so even though I'm going to my meetings and I'm getting my slip signed and I'm doing what the judge says, alcohol is now convincing me of what these people are telling me, because these people were armed about the facts of themselves. And so I could start to identify a little bit rather than to identify out. I could relate to what was being said. I fought all of it. I didn't get sober right away. I sponsored myself. Like I said, I was a student. I bought the books. I bought the Hazelden Guides. I bought all the information that should keep me sober. You know, I'm going to do it different this time. I just won't get arrested. And so I believe that the doctor's opinion saved my life. because I'm not a low bottom drunk. I'm not an everyday drinker. I'm, I guess, a spree drinker. I know the mental twist that they're talking about when I'm going to drink Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Oh my God, I'm never doing that again, because I, you know, I'm an alcoholic and things went a little crazy over the weekend. And, you know, where am I? Where's my car? Who are you? How did I get here? How did a nice girl like me get in a place like this? And so these people in the room started just telling the truth about themselves, and I could relate to that. I asked a guy to be my sponsor because that's the kind of girl I am, and he didn't think that was a real good idea, but he would take me to meetings until I would meet a woman that I would talk to. And she immediately got me into the steps, and that was, again, not right away, because I drank for probably 6 months while I was going to meetings. And took me about 9 months to lose that desire to drink. And you don't know when it's happening until some time passes. But I do remember sitting in a bar. You know, I was a bartender. My husband was a Budweiser beer truck driver. We had a boat. We're in the restaurant. I'm the only one sober. And so I had had enough and said, I'm going to drink, because I'm this AA thing. I still want to drink. And I remember ordering that drink. And I'd probably been going to meetings for about 9 months and working, I don't know, I'd probably gotten up to about the 6 and 7, 8, 9 area of the steps. So I knew something, you know, I'd heard some things. And so I went in the bathroom in that bar and I said, "Dear God, don't let me take that drink." And I didn't take that drink. And I didn't know how momentous that was when it was happening, because I have never not taken a drink that was sitting in front of me. Until later, and then getting through the 12th step and having that spiritual awakening and knowing that the grace that I can no longer ward off the grace of God. And I hope that everyone in this room that's a real alcoholic finds that day. That was terrifying to me. I didn't want anything to do with God when I came in here. Wasn't going to sit beside you if you were talking about God. Kind of made fun of you in the back of the room. If you were anywhere spiritual or happy, it's like, you know, what's it say? Do you want what we have? No. No, I don't want what you have, and I hope it's not contagious. And so I was not your willingly skipping down the road of AA. The other thing that I am so very grateful for, I got sober. There was four of us, and I was the baby. In sobriety, and then one was 2 years sober, one was 4 years sober, one was 8 years sober. And the one with 8 years sobriety ended up being my sponsor. But anyway, the big thing is that people that know my story know, big thing then was get in the car, because this is way before cell phones. I didn't call you, I showed up at your house if you were my sponsor. It was like, I got a problem, you know, So it wasn't calling. If it was calling, it was on the kitchen phone that was attached to a wall. And so I would just show up. But what they told me is get in the car. And it's like, where are we going? Doesn't matter, get in the car. And they took me to places like the institution meetings and the hospital meetings and the jail meetings. And I'm like less than a year sober. And what really made an impression on me is they had a 12-step list, which we have here. And I encourage all of you to get on it, because you'll forget you're even on it, because it's so rarely used nowadays, because most of the time they bring them right to our door. We don't even have to go looking for them. They bring them in on a bus and then we get to meet the newcomers. But anyway, and these days, there was a lot of rehabs, trust me, this was the 80s, there was a lot of rehabs, but there was a lot of 12-step calls where you went to a person's home that you did not know, and you did not know what you were walking into. And in those days, you took two people at least, because you did not know what you were walking into. Today, I meet the person alone. But anyway, that impressed the heck out of me, that these women were going to these other women's house to try and help them for no reason other than somebody called them and said, "Hey, can you go check out this 12-step call?" And that made an impression on me. I saw women in aid doing things that I had no idea how to do. I didn't know anything about dignity and grace when I came here. And so that was an amazing thing to watch. And, you know, I'm a tough girl. You know, I don't want that. But today I am awed by the women in AA and the dignity and grace that they can live with. So a little bit about sponsors and sponsorship. I've had a wonderful sponsors. I've had maybe three. Yeah, three. We won't count the guy. So we've had three. And I just talked to Avril Saturday was my Earth birthday. Last Wednesday was my AA birthday. day before that was my wedding. I do it all in a week, so it's over with. But anyway, so you can get sober before your birthday, because my birthday was last. But anyway, so my sponsor called me, or she's not my sponsor anymore. She's in Pennsylvania, and I'm here. But when I was in Baltimore, she was my sponsor. And she called me to say happy birthday and happy sobriety. You know, she's sober 40-some years. She's 80-some years old. She doesn't need to be calling me, but we stayed in contact over those years. And that's something, as a woman, I never had any female friends. Didn't want any female friends. You know, that was competition, didn't trust you. So that's a gift of sobriety, that I've known this woman. I've got another old sponsor who's not currently my sponsor. When I moved here, I need a flesh and blood, somebody looking at me, knowing I'm lying or not. In front of me, and she lives in Maine now, well, Spain and then Maine, and so I talked to her about a month ago, another 20-plus year friendship, because we stay in contact. And so today I probably talk less to my sponsor now. We just don't seem to hook up. She doesn't do texting. She's still talking on the kitchen phone, and so if I don't reach her, I don't reach her. But I have a network of people that I can confide in now. And it's not I know a lot of people. It's not a big network that I need to confide in today, though. I look more for spiritual direction. But what I do have is a handful of sponsees who I love dearly that just reminds me of me so much, because, you know, you don't take a drink for a while, you kind of forget, well, really, how bad was it? You know, how bad was it? It's a long time ago. Well, they remind me of how bad it was and how I don't want to do that again. And what I get the privilege of is sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And I think we all sponsor kind of how we were sponsored. And that works for me. And so what I usually do is, again, they bring them right in the door, or I go to the psych. Another thing I'll plug, Psych Center, Detox, great places to go if you want to do some 12-step work or whatever you want to call it, just sharing your story. But anyway, when they approach me or I approach them, I learned this from my current sponsor. She's big into service. And I was big into fellowship at the beginning. The service part took a while for me. But anyway, she'll watch the newcomer, and she can pick them out. There can be 150 people, and she can pick them out, and she sits behind them because she don't want them to get jittery, and she doesn't like swarm them right after the end, but she does make sure they're being talked to, and then she'll eventually talk to them. And so that's what I do now, is I just kind of watch and see, okay, is somebody going up to the newcomer? And I am embarrassed to say, so I won't say, how many years it took for me to even realize somebody just raised their hand with less than 30 days. Well, what's that mean to me? You know, that coin didn't drop for many, many years for me. I would come to a meeting thinking, what am I getting out of this meeting? Not what am I bringing to this meeting, or who can I help at this meeting? And I can tell you my life has changed tremendously since that coin dropped. So again, if it hadn't dropped yet, it's okay. You're in the right place for it to drop, and your life will change when it does. And so today, I've gone to Spain with a sponsee, I've gone camping with a sponsee, I've gone, just crazy stuff. You know, if you know me, I say you can't make this shit up. You know, how did these four women get in my car? I do remember going on 12-step calls and saying, please God, don't let her puke in my car. So I don't know if that's praying for myself or not, but I would. Before I would go to the unknown house, I would say, please don't let her puke in my car, as I'm taking her to detox or wherever it was. So today I get to practice these principles in all my affairs, and that means I get to live it at home. That was another coin that took quite a long time to drop, you can ask my husband. But today I try and practice these principles at home, at work. And again, it took a long time for this hard-headed alcoholic to realize I'm not the center of the universe. It doesn't revolve around me, and I really can. I remember people used to try and have a conversation. How was your weekend? And I'm like, why do you care? What do you want to talk to me about my weekend for? I don't want to know about your weekend. I don't want to know about your dog or your kids. Leave me alone. And so it took, you know, I had to be taught a lot of things in AA. And some of them are still difficult for me. I can talk passionately about things that I'm passionate about. And I know nothing about world current events, history, geography, or anything like that. So I am not a real good conversationalist. But if you're talking about getting sober, like I said, we are uniquely qualified. I know what it feels like from the very first drink I took. When I get that alcohol in me, I am thirsty. And that drink wants another drink, and that drink wants another drink. And it only takes a couple of minutes when you're talking to somebody to find out, what happens to you when you take a drink. And I'm not talking about tickets, and I'm not talking about divorces or getting fired. I'm talking about what happens in you when you take a drink. And then what happens in you up here when you don't take a drink, because that's even worse. You know, when I don't take a drink, that's when that kettle starts boiling. You know, I started to say, I'm never going to drink again on Monday, and I'm tending bar, so I'm, you know, but I didn't drink at work. I knew you would get in the way if I was drinking at work. So by Tuesday, I'm feeling a little bit better. By Wednesday, I might have eaten something. And by Thursday, even though I said I'm not going to drink till Friday, Thursday is a real good day to drink because I'm better now. It's going to be different now. My head tells me, yep, it's a good day to drink. And so I would drink Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I'm very grateful for the people that were in the rooms when I met, when I came in here, that told me I don't have to drink again. I don't have to take the elevator all the way down to the bottom. The book talks about how being spared the last 10 or 15 years of drinking, and I truly believe that that's what happened to me. And I am grateful to be sober and be of service in the grace of God and the light. Thank you.
Grant. Where's he at? There he is. Hiding in plain sight. Would you like to share?
I know you like to talk.
I do.
Good to see you, Dad.
I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic.
Grant.
First off, thank you, David. Excellent opening. I was listening to Sandy Beach, and those of you who've been around a little while probably have heard him talk or heard his speaker takes. And I was listening to him on the way back from dropping my kids off in Maryland yesterday. And he brought up this point that I thought about it, but I don't think I put a lot of thought into it all along the way with my own experience. But he brought up this idea, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And he said, well then, if we look at that's a solution, if that's where we're headed, if that's the direction we're going in, and work backwards from there, right? Then you might find yourself wondering, why do I need a spiritual awakening? Why am I doing anything that looks like a spiritual journey? If I have alcoholism, I'll tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know that I wanted to do anything that was going on here. I didn't even really know that I wanted to do anything different about my drinking. I really just wanted y'all to get along in such a way that I could get along a little bit better. And I didn't know how to make that work. And there was relationship stuff, and there was work stuff, and there was all the incriminating stuff, and there's all kinds of reasons why I was here, but I didn't know that I wanted to be here, and I didn't know what alcoholism was. And I'm grateful that there was people here who knew what alcoholism was, that it wasn't that I drank too much. That was my impression. I drank too much, but just didn't drink that 15th margarita or that extra shot of Jameson. I wouldn't have gotten into the trouble I got into. And it wasn't the case. The problem was the first drink. That when I take one drink, because I have this idea of ease and comfort that I need to feel better. Don't you understand? I need to feel better. And I take that first drink, and I don't know where that train is going to stop. Every single time. I have numerous experiences to go from a fifth drink where I got a little loopy and they drug me out of the bar because I was arguing with somebody and that was the end of the night, and waking up the next day because I was pulled out of a pool floating on a keg, soaking wet, and that's how my night stopped. You know, I didn't stop drinking because I thought, you know, I think I've had enough and I'm going to go stop now. I stopped usually because somebody was taking it away from me, or dragging me out of the bar, or the ambulance drivers were taking me to the hospital. That's how my drinking stops usually. And then it starts again when I'm miserable, irritable, restless. I can't sit still. I can't get comfortable. I can't get along with anybody. And I can't feel right until I have another drink. And as soon as I have another drink, that train gets a rolling and it's going to stop where it stops, not where I decide to get off. I always thought, I always told people this lie. I'm okay. I got this. I'm gonna stop when I'm ready to stop. I never stopped when I was ready to stop. And then I was graced with the opportunity for someone to hand me a meeting directory that I cast it aside until I had one more spree, one more night of drinking that I intended not to have, that I wasn't even gonna drink that night. And I ended up right back where I always ended up. And the guilt and the remorse and the shame that I came to the next morning produced in me a desire to go find that meeting directory that I cast aside and find out what alcoholism is by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I found out is I have this allergy, this craving, this physical need that once I put alcohol in my body, I'm not gonna stop. Somebody else is gonna have to stop me. Situation's gonna have to change that's gonna stop me. I'm not gonna stop on my own accord. And when I'm not drinking, you know, I love what you said. I'm either thinking about not drinking or thinking about drinking, but I'm having this debate all the time. What's gonna happen next? And ultimately I'm gonna decide to drink because it's the only thing I've ever found prior to AA that produces an effect in me that I enjoy, that I feel right with the world, that I go, yeah, everything's good. Whether it's all the problems are good, or this joyous occasion is more joyous than it's ever been, or whatever the scenario, in my head, I needed something more to make it better, to make it more interesting, to make it more lively, and then produce that effect, the spirits of alcohol. And when I'm separated from alcohol, I find out that I don't have any way to get along in the world. I'm spiritually sick. I have this emptiness inside me that just can't be filled up. And so I find out that because I have alcoholism, I'm not a heavy drinker, that I need some way to feel right without alcohol in order to have peace and ease and to be able to get along in the world that normal people get along in just fine with many of the difficulties I have, but they don't need a drink over, right? And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous unwilling, doing everything wrong. And much like many people have already said here tonight, I just heard people say, you don't have to drink anymore. You don't have to feel that way anymore. Keep coming back. And I did. And I got more miserable because I didn't take any of the suggestions. I didn't do 12 steps. I found out what not doing a 12-step program in a 12-step program produces: more insanity. And I was on the verge of killing myself when I heard a man share his story. When he just described alcoholism, and he described that his life is better than it's ever been as a result of doing 12 steps. And so I have to be reminded on a regular basis to come back to this and say, why am I here? I'm not here because I did something on my own, that I got a hold of these reins and I fixed my life. I'm here because I came here broken and willing to try what you offered. And so I have a responsibility to continue doing that, to say, oh, well, I might as well go over there and find out how that guy's doing and see if I can help him. I got 12 steps and I hung around AA a lot thinking, well, if he wants help, he'll come ask me. And that's not what the book says. It says, when approached by somebody who has all the facts about himself figured out, who has a truth about alcoholism well understood, that I now have a responsibility to go up to you if you're lost and confused, wondering why you're here, wondering if you belong here, to talk to you and find out all about you and maybe even show you how I did it. You know, not just tell you what the facts are, show you from my own experience. And when I do that, I get connected to you in a way that I can't describe. But I have a newfound appreciation for who you are and why you're here. And I have a purpose in that. And in doing that, I get free of all the ideas that I had earlier in the day that I wasn't good enough, I wasn't fast enough, I wasn't smart enough, I wasn't strong enough, I wasn't whatever crazy idea I had for that day. That all goes away because I care about you more than me for just that moment. And that's what I've learned here, is that, as it says in the third step, less and less I become concerned with my own problems, my own plans and schemes, and more I become concerned with what I can do for you and what you might need and how I might help you meet those needs. And that's what this step for me is all about. Thanks.
All right. Well, it looks like we are out of time. Thank you, everybody, for a really awesome meeting there. All right, well, let's thank our lead speaker first and everybody else who shared. Come on. There we go. Thank you all. All right, it is time to pass the seven tradition baskets. The seven traditions.
Well, I should probably be talking to a mic.
Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? I have one. You guys may or may not have seen these beautiful seasonal flyers to my left and also in my hand, but this home group is having a supper and a speaker. I've seen most of you there, but if you haven't been, you do not want to miss this. That is Monday, November 12th, 6 p.m. potluck. Bring a dish if you wish, and the speaker is at 7, and that will be Merv L. from Charlottesville. So come on out. We would love to have all of you. Any other announcements? I know the gratitude breakfast is coming up, which is on November 10th, 9:30 a.m., Bayside Presbyterian. Am I right? We got a speaker from each district coming out. It's going to be super awesome. There's going to be food. So, yeah, come on down. I don't have a flyer for that in front of me, so I'm probably butchering it, but you guys, thank you for bearing with me on that. Anything else? No? No announcements? It's usually not this quiet for announcements. All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? Woo! All right. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you. Let's start to my left.
Hi, I'm Spencer.
Hey, Spencer, welcome. Welcome. Hey, Sue, welcome. Hey, Ramon, welcome.
Hi, I'm Brittany, and I'm an alcoholic.
Brittany, welcome. Any more? Sure. All right. Literature is available to my left, your right. Please see a home group member after the meeting. If you don't have this book right here that everybody was talking about tonight, I highly suggest you pick one up. See a home group member if you need assistance.
Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here at this podium after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank David and everybody else that shared for coming out tonight. Thank you all. I hope you've enjoyed the once a month format. Okay, thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. It's at 22nd and Colonial. So if you cross the train, you take a right on Colonial Avenue. If you cross the train tracks, you've gone too far. It's on your right-hand side, right before the train tracks. Could I get a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Anybody out there with a book? Do I need to read it? I can read it if need be.
My name's Kenny, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kenny.
Hey, Kenny!
I'm slow, I'm sorry.
You're good.
All right, last two paragraphs, 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you as to us. Ask him in the morning, meditation, what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. If you own your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and give events, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understood God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Thank you all. We have a nice way of closing.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Two more down. Our Father.